From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Politics days at the Illinois State Fair, a chance for the parties to rally the troops, and in some cases, an opportunity for candidates to try to build support. We'll talk a bit about what happened there in the next half hour here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week, Patrick Fingston. He's author of the Illinois Political Newsletter, and he also hosts an afternoon show on WMAY Radio here in Springfield. Patrick, I know it's been a busy week. Thanks for taking time to join us.
I thought Taylor Swift was going to be on this show. She's doing podcasts now.
We don't get those types of ratings. State Fair, you spent your time out there in the heat and talking to a lot of politicians on both sides, of course. But I wanted to start out by asking about the fair itself. When I first started covering politics here in the state, and especially here in Springfield, the State Fair was a big deal. It was an opportunity for these candidates to get a little better known to, you know, the county chairman, a precinct committeeman who would show up, really an opportunity for them to sort of launch their campaigns. Does it still hold that same type of luster that it once did?
I question that it does, right? I talked to our old friend Bernie Schoenberg this week about, you know, how it kind of used to be with, you know, the Democrats would bus people in, and they still bus people in, but not to the same extent. They would do parades on the grandstand track, and, you know, Boss Daley would be waving in a convertible to the adoring crowds. And you know, the back when Republicans would run things, they'd have all their hires and political hires hanging out at Republican Day or Governor's Day. So the patronage job. So now in the days the patronages are gone, and you know, they've moved everything to the director's lawn. The growth of the Democratic County Chairs brunch, which had 2,700 people in the morning before the director's lawn rally, I certainly think they're not nearly in the same regard as they used to be.
Charlie, what's your thought on that? Because I know we talked before the show a bit, and you've mentioned it in the past. You really didn't cover the fair very often. You were often taking some comp time during that period, but it was a big deal for a long time.
Oh yeah, it was. And I think to me, the perfect indicator of how the fair has diminished in terms of how the political folks see it is the fact none of the three incumbent Republican congressmen came to the fair. I saw that reported. I believe that's correct. Patrick, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
That is correct.
But back in the day, that would have been unheard of unless the person were in the hospital or something like that. So, and I don't know where they were, but apparently they had other things to do better than to come and spend even a few hours at the fair.
Well, there definitely were some candidates who showed up, and a bit of a, you know, preview of what we're going to be seeing next year. It's hard to imagine, Patrick, that we're already looking ahead to another election. I guess that's politics in Illinois. But let's start with the Democrats. Much of the ticket is set for the Democrats, but some key races to watch in the upcoming primary. The first one, I guess, that jumps off the page is the U.S. Senate race. There's at least three candidates who all are sitting officials who are running there. What did you take away from this week when it comes to those candidates and their campaigns?
You know, it's interesting because you've got three major Democratic candidates in that Senate race. Raja Krishnamoorthy and Robin Kelly are members of Congress, and Juliana Stratton is the lieutenant governor, of course. Policy-wise, they haven't set each other, they haven't set themselves apart from each other in any way. They're essentially looking and sounding the same. They're getting a little chippy in places now, but you have to wonder when this is going to start to devolve and get a little ugly, because these things always get chippy as you go on, and there's still a long way to March. But right now, no one's really, you know, setting themselves apart from the rest of the field.
Yeah, Charlie, the gloves will have to come off at some point, I'm guessing, because they're all going to be, none of them have huge name ID right now across the state. Juliana Stratton is the lieutenant governor. Raja Krishnamoorthy is a congressman, and Robin Kelly, also a congresswoman. So at some point, they're going to have to differentiate themselves, don't you expect?
Yeah, and I'm not sure how they're going to do it, because I'm not sure there's that much difference in terms of policy. Among them, Krishnamoorthy has a huge advantage in terms of campaign funds, but on the other hand, Stratton has the backing of Governor Pritzker. So if Pritzker is willing, she also has almost an infinite amount of campaign funds. And Kelly is sort of in the middle in terms of her fundraising. And I think though, so far they've been talking about their personal experiences. When Krishnamoorthy did his introductory ad, he mentioned how he grew up in Peoria. And so from his take, he's got downstate roots, which neither Kelly has nor Stratton. On the other hand, Kelly could say, well, I represent a congressional district that goes all the way down to Vermilion County. So Danville is part of my district. So I have some sense of what is important for people outside the Chicago area. Stratton has been talking about her experience as a statewide elected official. So they're trying to differentiate themselves at this point without necessarily attacking the other one. But at some point, I think that's going to occur. But as you said, November is still a long way away. And I think we're only about a week or so into the period in which candidates can begin circulating petitions. They're not due, if I'm not mistaken, it's November before they have to turn in the position, mm-hmm. the petitions.
Well, Patrick, one way they can separate themselves, and I guess they'll try to do this, is who can best stand up to Donald Trump or the other Republicans in the U.S. Senate and in the U.S. House. So did we hear a little bit about that this week?
Yeah, I mean, that's the message at this point, right? Is Donald Trump bad? Is the key message for Democrats, and that, you know, we're going to fight for freedom and against tyranny and against the wannabe fascists and that sort of thing. And that's, you know, that's all hitting your Democratic talking points, you know, especially in a room where Donald Trump was literally portrayed in an AI fueled video as Darth Vader. So, you know, it's clear that they see, you know, Trump and Republicans as the enemy, right? As the villains in the story, and even more than normal. Right now, though, it's only insiders talking about a Senate race. It's political freaks like us. And the majority of people, one, don't even know that there's a Senate race next year. And two, have no concept that there's a primary for it. At some point, they're going to have to talk about something more than Donald Trump. And it will be interesting to see how, especially on the Democratic side, you know, they will try and blame Donald Trump for inflation and cost of living increases. And many of the economic issues that are out there. I still have a hard time understanding how you're going to sell tariffs to regular voters, even though they're hugely important and they're going to raise costs on everything we buy. But you know, the general and the primary are two different things. And who can be the most anti-Trump? Maybe enough to win a primary.
Well, tariffs, they are complicated, but Charlie, that seems like the pocketbook issues are what usually swing some of these elections.
Yeah, that's what the polling suggests. I would guess the peril for the Republicans would be that as we get nearer to Election Day, which is more than a year away now, some of the impact of the tariffs people will be feeling that. Some of the impacts on healthcare and on Medicaid, and the effort to eliminate everybody who's not a red, white, and blue American from this country, those will start having impacts. I'm pretty sure, I forget which one of the candidates, but they were warning there are a number of hospitals that are in, particularly in rural areas, that are in danger of closing because of cuts to to healthcare. There's also a concern about home healthcare workers, many of whom are not documented. And so if your grandmother has a home healthcare worker who's maybe an immigrant from Mexico who came here 20 years ago but doesn't have papers, and suddenly she starts to go to your grandma's house, ICE rounds her up and ships her off, you're going to feel that. And so I think the impact of the what people characterize as a bill that cut services for regular people to provide tax breaks to billionaires, that's going to be the Democrats' message. And I think that's going to become more apparent to people, and people will be paying more attention.
Patrick, Charlie mentioned there the immigration crackdown that we've seen here by the Trump administration. Did you hear a lot about that, maybe from the Democrats? Did Republicans talk much about that at the state fair?
Republicans talked more about it than Democrats, in the sense that we've got to get the illegals out, right? There was a quote from Tony McCombie yesterday, the House Republican leader. Let me see if I can find it. Illegal immigrants should not be on the rolls of our Medicaid. They shouldn't. They just shouldn't. They shouldn't be in the state. The governor should repeal the sanctuary state. Our budget problems would go away. First of all, illegal immigrants aren't eligible for Medicaid. And the legislature repealed the health benefits for immigrant adults program for undocumented adults back in July. And there are still things in the budget that do go to benefit and help those who are here either seeking asylum or illegally, which you can have a conversation about that on the merits. The asylum situation is a federal law, which is where, you know, all of the people who were bussed here from Texas a couple of years ago now, they were all in the country legally because they were going through the asylum process. But Republicans have found the talking point to just say, well, they're just illegals. Right. And it's really, they're trying to make it a wedge issue of sort of an us versus them, which is galvanizing to the Republican base.
The thing that struck me as being not very thoughtful about McCombie's comment, she suggested that if we would stop providing health care for illegals, we would have no budget problems. We could do mass transit. We could fully fund education, all the rest of us. I'm thinking to myself, the numbers just don't work. And taking it a step further, supposing you say, okay, hospitals, we're not going to allow you to provide optional services to anybody who can't prove their citizenship. But if somebody shows up at death's doorstop,
they're required by law to treat them.
Sure. Federal law requires them to treat the person. And people who are undocumented may be reluctant without having some kind of financial assistance to go when they start feeling sick. And then they wind up in the emergency room where it costs a heck of a lot more than if they were able to see a doctor and get treated earlier.
Well, I mentioned the U.S. Senate race, the three-person race that we've got right now on the Democratic side. Looks like there is finally a candidate on the Republican side running for the U.S. Senate. This is, of course, to replace Dick Durbin, and it's another Springfield person who has joined the race, and that is Don Tracy, who many people might remember. He's run unsuccessfully for lieutenant governor before, but he was also the Illinois State Republican Party chairman for a bit and resigned from that last year. What led to this decision?
Well, so what he told me was that he, in just full disclosure, I've known Don for a long time. I like him a lot personally, and we'll hold him accountable as I do to everybody. But just so you know that I do have a relationship with him. He was interested in the Senate race as soon as Dick Durbin announced he wasn't going to seek re-election. The conversation about Senate shifted toward Richard Porter, the former Republican National Committee member who, as of a couple of weeks ago, pretty much every Republican thought he was running for Senate, and then all of a sudden decided he was out. Tracy had started to float his name for governor because there were no top-tier Republican candidates in the race for governor. You can argue there still aren't any. So when Porter stepped away, Tracy set his sights on Senate. And let's be fair. I think Don is a politically savvy guy who understands that he will not be the favorite in this race. But the thing you'll get out of a Don Tracy, you know, he may step in it a couple of times, but he is going to run a decent, respectable campaign that doesn't blow up Republican chances down the ticket, doesn't make him a laughingstock in national news. He's going to raise some money and put on a decent campaign and maybe catches lightning in a bottle. Maybe Democrats nominate somebody who's toxic, too progressive, and he can get in the mix. But, you know, I think he knows, I think Republicans know that they're not the favorites in this race, but I think a lot of them, even people who were detractors of Don Tracy in his 3.5 years as party chairman, will tell you he's going to be a more respectable candidate than some of the wild crackpots out there that were floating their names.
Well, let me ask you, Patrick, does he have to run, I shouldn't say against Donald Trump, but maybe not in lockstep with Donald Trump, to really have a shot at coming close in this race and possibly even winning?
That's a really hard question because this state is supremely split on Donald Trump, right? You can't just throw the baby out with the bathwater downstate, right? Just see what happened to Bruce Rauner when he did that in 2018 and lost all of his support downstate. So he can't just go out and say the things about Donald Trump that I say, right? That would kill his chances with his base. But he also can't just roll into Rolling Meadows and Naperville and the North Shore with a MAGA hat on. Because that would be just as, I mean, that would scare moderate suburban female voters away as fast as humanly possible. So it's a really tough line that whatever Republican is able to win in this state, they haven't shown they've been able to walk that line yet, to not scare away moderate females, specifically in the suburbs, moderate voters in general in the suburbs, without alienating all your conservatives downstate.
Charlie, any thought there that there is a lane for him to possibly pull something like this out by trying to walk that line really tightly?
Well, I think that's got to be his hope, that as Patrick mentioned, that, you know, there'll be lightning in the bottle or whatever. He told reporters that he's going to mostly self-fund his campaign, and he thinks that he can attract voters from all the different, what would you say, segments of the Republican Party. And one quote, he said, it's a team effort. Having been state chairman, having run statewide before in 2010, I know people throughout the state. A lot of people, I think, will help me, and I'll need their help. I'll need the help of all Republicans. He also said that he supports Trump's agenda. The Trump agenda is peace, prosperity, and law and order. And I think most Americans, including most Illinoisans, support that agenda. So he's, if you will, making overtures to the real hard right people in the party, the people whose antipathy towards him when he was state party chairman resulted in him resigning that post, to try and say that, yes, I will support the president, but on the other hand, here are all the other things that I want to do.
Patrick, I got to ask this question. You'd be a good person to answer this, I think.
Uh-oh.
Through the years, most of the people I've known that didn't work in government or in politics directly often were what I call those split party voters, split ballot voters. They would vote maybe, you know, for maybe the top of the ticket might be Democrat, but later down the ticket, maybe they like a Republican here and there. Are we seeing that still? Do you expect we'll see that? I mean, Trump is very divisive. Some people love him. Some people really can't stand him, and they don't like the policies. Are we going to see as many of those people splitting their ballot going forward?
There's polling out there about ticket splitting, and I don't have it handy as we talk this afternoon, but the number of ticket splitters has decreased dramatically from, you know, 15, 20, 30 years ago, right? That, you know, it wouldn't have been a big shock for somebody to in 98 vote for Glenn Pichard for governor and Peter Fitzgerald for U.S. Senate. So it's, you know, those voters are a little fewer and far between than we would have had years ago. And I think that's part of the polarization of our politics, that it's become so tribal that it's either it's my team or it's your team. And, you know, when you're a conservative like me and you go around and you say nice things about a Democrat once in a while, like, you know, I've said nice things about Susana Mendoza and Nikki Budzinski and, you know, a few Democrats at the state house, and my Republican friends get angry at me. Like, how can you say that about her? She's a liberal congresswoman, or she's a Chicago Democrat. I'm like, she's doing a good job. What do you want me to say? All I can do is play it straight and call balls and strikes. And it's just that tribalism that we see in politics today that has really eliminated any critical thinking.
Charlie, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I was, as Patrick was speaking, I was recalling during my time as a reporter when we would have Republican governors and we would have Democratic secretaries of state or Democratic treasurers or comptrollers. And there were times when we had Democratic governors and we had Republicans in those statewide offices. This, for me, who's watched this stuff for a long time, it's sort of a like recent development, if you will, where one party will so totally dominate the statewide map so that every elected statewide official is of that party. And I think, as Patrick said, it's this new day and age where there's this polarization. You have to, I guess, almost believe that everybody on my side is good, everybody on the other side is evil, which I think is a incredibly stupid way to approach things. And I apologize to anybody who's offended by me saying that, but
tribalism is bad. I hope we can all agree on that. I mean, at least anyone who can see this critically is that, and you're right, Charlie. I mean, we have a history of at least some ticket splitting in those six constitutional offices, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, George Ryan gets elected governor, Jesse White gets elected Secretary of State. You know, Jim Edgar gets elected governor, Roland Burris is the Attorney General, right? You know, we have a history of ticket splitting. It's all changed since 2014 was the last time any Republican won statewide. You had, you know, Rauner and Topinka win statewide, and Topinka unfortunately passed away a month later. And after that, no Republican has won statewide in the state since then.
Well, I'm going to run out of time here, and I do want to save just a couple of minutes here at least. We did get a little better handle on what the race for governor on the Republican side will possibly look like. We have one candidate there who's announced who was at the fair, and another one who says he's going to be announcing. So, Patrick, fill us in on that.
Yeah, so Jim Mendrick is the sheriff in DuPage County. He's been in the race for a few months now, really doing the law and order thing, which isn't at the top of the polling issues right now. So I don't know how much he's catching on. Ted Dabrowski is a former Illinois Policy Institute guy who now works with a super far right kind of wannabe news site called Wire Points that you know, kind of pushes a right side agenda. He's got the backing of some of the more insurgent right wing side. And then there's another guy, the Cook County Republican Party chairman, Republican Central Committee member, Aaron Del Mar, who says he's going to try and make a decision by next week. All three bring some things to the table. All three have some weaknesses, some very serious weaknesses. Don't know that any of them are serious challengers to J.B. Pritzker at this point, and Republicans are kind of just shrugging their shoulders right now because I don't know that they have any better options.
And Charlie, anything that stands out to you from those guys?
No, and that's the thing. It used to be candidates at both parties, there would be somebody who really stood out, and I don't think any of these folks, I mean, they're probably all good, decent people, and there's probably a small, tiny fraction of the Illinois electorate who's heard of any of them, you know, their hometown people, everybody in DuPage County, or many people would know who the sheriff is, that kind of thing. But as I see it, the big problem is, as I said earlier, in the context of Stratton, Pritzker has got a lot of money, and he's shown that he's willing to invest it in himself and in other candidates. As I've said on the show before, if I'm a wealthy Republican and I want to try and make an impact, I don't think I'm going to invest money in what, for all intents and purposes, is a losing cause in Illinois, when I could maybe use it in a U.S. Senate race or U.S. House race in some other state that would be very significant in terms of party control in Congress.
Patrick, just a couple of seconds here left, but any thoughts on that? Sure. As far as outside money or big money here in the state funneling into these campaigns, or is it going to go to trying to keep Congress, control of Congress at the national level?
So Ted Dabrowski is trying to get Dick Uihlein's money on board with his campaign. I've heard so far that he has been unsuccessful in securing that cash. And I don't know that you really want it that badly, because Dick Uihlein's track record of winning in this state is not particularly good.
Let's go to our notes from the field. And Patrick, we'll start with you this week.
So I reported earlier this week that Illinois Republican Party Chairman Kathy Salvey had been informing members of the State Central Committee that she plans to resign likely by the end of the month after about a year on the job. She was asked about it at the state fair on Thursday, and she kind of issued a non-denial about it, essentially saying, "I'm state party chair until I'm not," kind of trying to call into question my reporting. I stand by it, by the way. I stand by it as long as I breathe, and I'm fully expecting her to resign the position by the end of the month, and then you'll have to find another Republican Party chairman in this state, which is not a job anybody particularly wants.
Mm. All right, and Charlie.
Earlier this week, Governor Pritzker signed into law a provision that would require police agencies in Illinois to do more thorough background checks on prospective officers. And this measure, obviously, is in response to the July 2024 shooting death of Sonia Massey in Tangamon County by a sheriff's deputy, Sean Grayson. He was fired from the sheriff's office after the shooting. He was charged with first-degree murder charges. He pleaded not guilty, and he's scheduled to go on trial in Peoria in October. But this new law would require a police department or sheriff's office to, when they're making a hire, they would have to request employment personnel files from the applicant's previous employers, including other law enforcement agencies. And they would have to provide things like military service records, police discipline databases, employment and criminal history, and Grayson's employment record. People started to look at it after the shooting. He'd worked for 6 departments in 4 years. He had 2 convictions for driving under the influence. He had a history of reprimands and disobeying superiors. The obvious question afterwards was, how did Sangamon County, how did they hire this guy with his background? And the answer apparently is they just went on somebody's recommendation. Yeah, he's a good guy. I know his dad. So that measure will take effect January 1st. And it was non-controversial when it went through the legislature. It passed the House 101-12, and in the Senate, it was 56-0.
That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Patrick Fingston of the Illinois Newsletter and also WMAY Radio. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.